globalization, to a large extent, is actually removing responsibility from people within their own locality to take care of themselves.
We know that people do not know who rules or why and how he rules. And yet they know that there is a power that certainly rules.
When we travel 1,000 miles in an hour and a half, we have traveled through whole areas of existence which we have not necessarily gained. We will pop into a Hindu village, but we won't know a damn thing about that Hindu village.
If you push that all the way, you see, what it means is that we will increasingly tend to inhabit all of these areas in depth simultaneously.
Južna hemisfera. Vsako drugo sredo poročamo o južni polobli. Točno o poldan.
Afganistan, dežela državnih udarov. Pozdravljeni v poletni južni hemisferi. Danes se bomo posvetili Afganistanu, vojni, ki poteka z Združenimi državami Amerike že od leta 2001 in privatnim vojskam, ki so v tej državi vse bolj prisotne. Pred slabim tednom je Eric Prince, ustanovitelj privatnega podjetja Blackwater, ki se ukvarja s trženjem vojaških storitev, predlagal, da bi vojno v Afganistanu še bolj privatizirali, s čimer naj bi znatno zmanjšali stroške. Za začetek pa nekaj zgodovine. Afganistan nikoli ni bil koloniziran. Dva poskusa Združenega kraljestva v 19. stoletju sta spodletela. 1929 je prišel na oblast kralj Muhammad Nadir Khan, ki si je za vzornika vzel Mustafa Kemala Ataturka ter poskušal državo modernizirati in sekularizirati. Pri tem je naletel na odpor in neuspeh. Leta 1933 ga je ubil 15-letni študent na proslavi ob zaključku šolskega leta. Zgodovino Afganistana v 19. in na začetku 20. stoletja razloži Thomas Rutish, eden od direktorjev organizacije Afghanistan Analysis Network.
Afghanistan is one of the poorest countries of the world that hasn't changed for 100 years. It also has never been directly colonialized. The British tried three times in the 1800s, and in 1919 Afghanistan regained its own independence, full independence from the British. They were not fully sovereign. The British actually forced them to give them control over their foreign relations. So that also led to an isolation of Afghanistan. So this combined poverty and international isolation led to kind of 100 years between, let's say, 1919, full independence, and now of a conflict between people in Afghanistan who wanted to modernize their country and those who objected against it. And that very often also for what people call tribal traditions very often resulted in violence, and that sporadically has happened over the last century, starting in 1929. There was a reformer king who oriented himself towards Ataturk's Turkey, modernization of the army, of the state, taxation, and such things. And also he wanted to curb the role and the influence of the Islamic clergy. So there was resistance, and he was toppled and thrown out of the country.
Po uboju kralja je oblast prevzel njegov 19-letni sin Mohamed Zahir Shah in sledilo je razmeroma mirnih 40 let. Tudi druga svetovna vojna ni zadela Afganistana, saj je bila ena izmed neutralnih držav. Kralj Zahir Shah je leta 1964 neuspešno poskušal uvesti demokracijo z dvodomnim parlamentom, kjer bi eno tretjino poslancev določil kralj, eno tretjino ljudstvo, eno tretjino pa lokalni sveti.
Then Afghanistan had 40 years of relative peace. Also, when our countries were in Second World War, Afghanistan was neutral and could develop. And after Second World War, mainly starting in the mid-1960s, the then king, Muhammad Zahir Shah, who died 10 years ago, tried political opening and democratization top-down by introducing a full-fledged parliament, elections and so on, which led to the formation of political forces throughout the spectrum from leftists. They had two currents in the leftists. One was pro-Moscow Marxist, the other were Maoist, more oriented towards China, through, let's say, liberals and conservatives and social democrats, relatively small groups, to Islamists. And there was a new constitution and a political parties law introduced, but the political parties law was never signed. So the more radical parties of the left and of the Islamist right went into the underground because the way to come to power through elections was blocked for them, and they start to organize the overthrow of the government. And if you want, so the communists won in 1978. And their regime started to be very progressive and reformist, land reform and so on, which also then is kind of this modernization programs, which was the root cause of the conflicts over the last 100 years. Resistance came up that was very quickly armed from neighboring Pakistan, and the Islamists, which also have been in the underground and didn't play a big role, got a lot of foreign support, particularly starting after the Soviet invasion. The leftist regime came under a lot of pressure, and they asked the Soviet Union to intervene, which happened Christmas 1979, long time ago, but still in the memories or on the memories of many Afghans. And the Islamists were armed, and the whole fighting started. The Western world and the Arabic states and China supported the Mujahideen, as they were called, against the pro-Soviet government. Finally, in 1992, the Mujahideen won, which also had to do with the collapse of the Soviet Union. Russia did not pay anymore for the Allied government in Kabul. And after that, the wider world, the West in particular, was happy and turned their backs to Afghanistan.
Leta 1973 je zaradi obtožb korupcije proti kraljevi družini in suše ter slabe ekonomske situacije bratranec kralja Muhammed Daud Khan izvedel državni udar ter ukinil monarhijo in razglasil Afganistan za republiko, sebe pa za prvega predsednika. Pri tem mu je pomagala tudi komunistična ljudska demokratska stranka Afganistana. Naslednji državni udar je izvedla ta ista ljudska demokratska stranka Afganistana leta 1978 proti svojemu nekdanjemu zavezniku Daudu. Muhameda Dauda in člane njegove družine so ubili ter s podporo Sovjetske zveze zavladali za naslednjih dobrih 10 let. Po propadu Sovjetske zveze se je podpora Moskve končala, kar je povzročilo padec oblasti in zmago mudžahedinov, ki so jih podpirale Pakistan, Saudova Arabija, Kitajska in Zahod.
Because the mujahedin who had won the war lost the peace, so to say, they started fighting amongst each other about control and lost the support of the population. And then the Taliban movement, the new movement, very religious, conservative, started coming up and then promised to clean up the country, to end the factional wars, and got the support of the population, of large parts of the population, and won. And then they hosted a couple of Arab radicals, including Osama bin Laden, who as a young man and building engineer has helped the Mujahideen fighting the Soviets. So he had a lot of respect amongst this part of the Afghan population in those days, amongst the Mujahideen at least. But he then started turning against the West, organized, based in Afghanistan, organized the terrorist attacks on 9/11. And that turned or made the world aware of Afghanistan again. And the intervention happened. The Taliban regime was toppled. Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda fled. And the new chance emerged in 2001 that Afghanistan could again try to modernize, become a normal country and part of the international community, so to say, a wish which was very widespread amongst the Afghan population. But again, the Taliban were just defeated temporarily, and they came back due to a lot of mistakes which happened during the international intervention after 2001.
Razdrobljeni mudžahedinom pa po porazu komunistov ni uspelo vzpostaviti oziroma postaviti enotne vlade. S podporo Pakistana je nato nastalo talibsko gibanje, s katerim si je Pakistan želel pridobiti Afganistan kot zaveznika v regiji. Talibi so leta 1996 zavzeli Kabul in vzpostavili Islamski emirat Afganistana. Dogajanje povzame Vasja Badalič, avtor knjige o vojni v Afganistanu.
V 90-ih je bilo tako, ne? Zdaj po odhodu sovjetskih okupacijskih sil se je v Afganistanu začela državljanska vojna. V prvi polovici 90 so se te različne frakcije, ki so se prej borile proti sovjetom, so se pol borile med sabo za oblast in potem znotri tega kaosa, ne, državljanske vojne, so se postopoma talibi vzpostavili kot najmočnejša sila. In potem v drugi polovici 90-ih so talibi tisti bili, ki so pač bili na oblasti. In bili so na oblasti do leta 2001, ne, dokler so pač Američani prišli tja.
Rutiš razloži razliko med talibom in džihadistom.
Also we need to make a distinction between them and similar Islam or with Islamist groups which go under the label of jihadists, because most of the jihadists want the worldwide jihad. Well, the Afghan Taliban, from my point of view, are something like national Islamists, so they don't think too much about the outside world. They want to take over Afghanistan again.
Kdo so talibi, pojasni Rutiš.
Afghanistan has often been described as a tribal society, but that's only part of the truth. What the Taliban say themselves is we do not recognize different ethnic groups. We do not recognize tribes. We know that we, every one of us belongs to a tribe, but we are an all-Afghan movement. So in the way they understand themselves, they are a nationalist Islamist movement. And of course there are tribal factors in it. We know that between different commanders, between different fronts, as they call their fighting groups, very often they are also tribal boundaries and conflicts, but that's only one part of the equation.
Talibe pa najbolj podpira Pakistan. Vrnemo se po kratkem glasbenem predahu. Dobrodošli še vedno v oddaji Južna hemisfera, kjer se ukvarjamo situacijo v Afganistanu. Talibi so po prevzemu oblasti leta 1996 na oblast ostali oziroma na oblasti ostali do ameriške invazije na Afganistan leta 2001, ki je bila domnevni povračilni ukrep za napade 11. septembra istega leta. Takrat je bil tudi prvič uporabljen 5. člen Severnoatlantske pogodbe, sledeč kateremu so Američani izvedli samo obrambo z invazijo na državo na drugem koncu sveta. Kakšni so bili načrti Američanov in kako se je situacija potem zares odvila, opiše Rutiš.
Plan was to stabilize Afghanistan politically after the dark era, short and dark era of the Taliban. And that did not go well because the system, political system set up was only democratic on the surface. There was a lot of corruption, which has become endemic and so on. And also the new government was rather exclusive towards many groups, which does not only refer to the Taliban. So the legitimacy actually was kind of diminishing over the years because that did not change, and that also ended in an escalation of the war, of violence, which we see that year by year the number of civilian casualties went up, number of internally displaced people, I mean Afghans who lost their home and land due to conflict, etc., etc. So what happened from there is it all started with high hopes, and then most of the Afghans supported the international engagement in Afghanistan, but now most of them are really disappointed, which then, of course, also helps other constituencies to find supporters, which includes the Taliban, but also other armed and non-armed opposition groups.
Ameriška invazija na Afganistan velja za neuspeh. Varnostno situacijo v Afganistanu po letu 2001 opiše Rutiš.
Plan was to stabilize Afghanistan politically. Well, it has actually deteriorated every year from 2001, if we generalize a little bit. But of course there's a new phase in that development after the end of 2014, when the former ISAF mission in Afghanistan ended, so the international, also US-led coalition, which was actively participating in the war, we now have a new, much smaller, ISAF had up to 140,000 soldiers over a couple of years. We are now down to 10% with around 14,000 or under 14,000. Of course, there's still also combat, Western combat troops. There always has been a parallel mission, which was also under ISAF, and now it's called Freedom Sentinel. So these are mainly special forces and so on. And you also have the, as what the U.S. Military calls it itself, the white and black special forces. So people really operating in a very clandestine way and together with illegal and absolute intransparent militias, Afghan militias also, which are known for human rights abuses, torture and all kind of atrocities. And this will be just kind of, we will see that in a much larger potency if the privatization happened. But what we were talking about was the deterioration of the security situation. Lesser Western troops gave larger room to maneuver to the Taliban, and since 2014 we saw that they're operating in larger groups, doing more frontal attacks on district and even provincial capitals in Afghanistan, and only a slight change of policy in the last years of Obama, which now continues, which gives the Afghan Air Force and also Special Forces more authorities to fight against them again. Although the plan was to end that altogether, has again escalated the war. And they are still a stalemate, I would say, but a stalemate on a, with a high level of violence and operational activity almost every day in most of the country, with changing front lines, because it is partly an asymmetrical war, a guerrilla war. You never know where the next fighting happens, where the next terror attack happens, and we have seen an intensification of the fighting. We have not seen that the Taliban have been weakened. They also have extended their territorial influence, which is quite difficult to measure. But in the general trend, they have made progress since 2014.
Pred slabim tednom je podjetnik Eric Prince v javnosti začel ameriško vlado pozivati, da bi že tako sprivatizirano vojno še bolj privatizirali. Vlogo zasebnih najemnikov, ki nadomeščajo redno vojsko, opiše Badalič.
Mislim, da je ta privatizacija in to neko najemanje teh privatnih vojakov že poteka od vsega začetka te vojne proti teroriju. Ne? V Afganistanu so ta privatna vojaška podjetja prisotna že od vsega začetka. Opravljali so predvsem naslednje funkcije, recimo servisiranje vojaških baz, ameriških vojaških baz, se pravi dajanje raznoraznih storitev ne, na teh bazah, potem tudi recimo izgradnja teh baz, potem opravljali so tudi delo to varovanje ameriških konvojev, ne, ki so dostavljali blago in raznorazne dobrine tem bazam. Poleg tega pa so ta privatna varnostna podjetja tudi, rekel, občasno sodelovala tudi v bojih, ne, ampak bolj v nekih obrobnih nalogah, ne, niso nikoli imele neke centralne, take pomembne pozicije. Ne. Ampak to je prisotno v bistvu že od vsega začetka, ne, tako da to ni neka novost, ki bi se pojavila sedaj v zadnjem času. To je pač nek trend, ki že bo rekel traja kar precej časa.
Dotakne se tudi motivov Prinsa za take izjave.
Mislim, vse je logično, ne, se pač on živi od tega, ne, on pač služi s tem, pač najprej on je bil šef tega Blackwaterja, ne, in je že od vsega začetka udeležen v teh poslih in je normalno, ne, pač, da on rekel, zastopa samega sebe in to, da bi pač še več profitov iztržil iz tega. Mislim pa, da v bistvu zelo škodljivo, ne, ta privatizacija je zelo škodljiva, ker mislim, da ne prinaša neke bolj večje učinkovitosti, ne, kar obljubljajo sicer ti, ne, ki podpirajo privatizacijo. In mislim, da je tudi skrajno nevarno, zato ker se je izkazalo, ne, da znajo biti ti privatni vojaki tudi skrajno neodgovorni, ne, kot se je pokazalo recimo v Iraku v tistem incidentu, ne, ko so ti člani Blackwaterja pobili tam civiliste. Tako da mislim, da to ne prinaša nekih boljših, boljših izboljšav, no, tako da je škodljivo. No. Privatno podjetje, ne, privatno vojaško podjetje bo vedno pač hrepenelo po večjem profitu. Ne, in mislim, da njim je vseeno, v kakšno smer se razvija vojna, ne, njim je konec koncev tudi vseeno, ali se v vojni zmaga ali izgubi, ne, ker njim je važno samo, da vojna je, da so lahko tam in pač, da služijo. Ne. To je bistvo privatnega podjetja. Ne. Zdaj, neka državna vojska pač bi morala, ne, seveda pač ravnati racionalno in, bom rekel, res zasledovati neke cilje, ne, ki ne bi bili v skladu z neko politiko države, ne, ki ne bi tudi bila racionalna, ne, čeprav žal dosti krat tako ni. Ne. Tako da mislim, da je to temeljna razlika. Ne. Če se pač v vojni pojavi neko privatno podjetje, potem oni si bo pač vedno želeli vojno in vedno pač hrepeneli po teh čim večjih profitih. Ne.
Ni pa on edini vojni dobičkar oziroma edini v konfliktu interesov, pojasni Rutiš.
When we look into the US political system, you very often have very influential people who are close to the president, and sometimes they're even the president. We don't know whether there is a strong dividing line between their political interest in their elected office and their private capacity. There are a lot of people. I mean, there's a former U.S. ambassador to Afghanistan who's quite influential, who also owns companies who have interest in exploitation of minerals in Afghanistan and so on. And that's also the case for some of these private companies. I mean, we know that Mr. Prince's former companies were also engaged in countries which are interesting for mineral or carbohydrate and so on. So there is always also that motive of making business in those countries, including Afghanistan, which then very often is not in the interest of the local populations. So that's probably also one part of the conflict, which is even fueling the conflict. Although I would not call that economic warfare against Afghanistan, but as we also know from other countries in Africa, Asia, Latin America, Turkey, and so on, when you start digging a gold mine in Afghanistan, and there are gold mines in Afghanistan, at least there's gold, and the mines are not working very well, very often it turns out or it turns into a war against the local ecology, because all the poisonous substances which you need to extricate gold or other minerals might be very dangerous for the local population. Then they are usually told you get jobs and whatever, but very often then foreign specialists are flown in and the local population only gets the badly paid and manual jobs, and the environment is destroyed, and most of the money flies out or gets out or leaves the country. And we also know from some deals about mining in Afghanistan that the Afghan government sees itself forced to give kind of tax holidays for the companies who are doing that for a couple of decades and so on. So also this will not be in the interest of the Afghan population. So
Afganistan ima dva usporedna sistema moči, uradnega in neuradnega. O tem, kako delujeta in volilnih nepravilnostih, nadaljuje Rutiš.
Afghanistan is characterized by two parallel systems of how power is projected. One is the official system through elections, the president, parliament, even political parties, etc. And the president usually and the parliament are elected, but all elections which happened after 2001 in an increasing degree have been marred by a lot of manipulation. And the last presidential election, 2014, ended without a conclusive result, meaning that the two main pretenders did not accept the result, and they were forced by some U.S. pressure to build a national unity government, which is everything but united. On that, and of course, you have a central state, which is still supported mainly by the West. A lot of money is coming in, so through that money, also power is projected, because the government can give it to certain people and withhold it from other people. So there is some power leverage in it. But there's also a parallel system of, let's call it, strongmen, former warlords, other politicians, which have become influential over the past years, also through money very often, which they received from outside. And this is a more or less kind of a distribution of posts and influence, which is going on behind the curtains. The Afghans speak of the palace when they talk about that power center. That's the president with a number of known and not so well-known advisors who set the political course of the country, or at least of the government, without consulting even the cabinet too much and the parliament very rarely. So this is something which some people probably would call traditional. I just would call it non-regular or non-official method of governance.
Afganistan je država, ki je najbolj odvisna od mednarodne pomoči, zato ima tujina močne vzvode za izvajanje pritiska na afganistansko vlado. Kako se to odraža v manku soverenosti, za zaključek današnje južne hemisfere, pojasni Rutiš.
Afghanistan is by far the most aid dependent country in the world. The next one would be the Palestinian Authority, which only receives percent-wise on their budget half of what Afghanistan receives. Figures differ between 80% and 95% of all resources come from outside, which economically makes Afghanistan a non-sovereign state, and which gives the donors, and particularly the US, which is the biggest one, a lot of political leverage on Afghanistan. But on the other hand, Afghans are quite nationalistic in general, and they don't like that, of course. And the current president sits a little bit between two chairs, serving the nationalistically minded constituency at home, and also respecting what the international community, who pays most of his bills, wants from him. So there's also a lot of tension in this, also when it comes to regional relations. Afghanistan always is interested in, for example, in maintaining good relations with Iran, and that's not always what the US governments want.
Južno hemisfero je pripravil Vit.
Ne uđe.